And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. By the way, if you're wondering where to find us, so here's the deal. We do span indeed from like roughly Clanton to the Tennessee line, from, you know, Tuscaloosa all the way over to Gadsden. We're pretty much blanketing the northern half of the state. AM and FM capabilities out of the Huntsville market. We're on 770 AM, 92.5 FM, which are Cumulus Broadcasting stations. In Birmingham, Coleman market, we are on WYDE 850 AM and WXJC 101.1 FM. So you can find us there. You can also, by the way, go to our website, rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. If you find yourself getting outside of our overly broad AM-FM capabilities here at Right Side Radio, then all you got to do anywhere in the whole wide world, go to the World Wide Web, go to rightsideradio.org. We live stream the show on audio and video every day. Like right now, you can tune in. You can watch Boomer and I doing the show in studio. And we do have the professional Right Side studio. Do we not, Boomer? It is unbelievably professional.
It is awesome.
We are professional people.
It is all done up.
Professional decor, professional tech stuff that I don't know what it all does, but it works.
But the lights work.
The
lights work. And if you push the button, you talk to people.
If I push the little button, I talk to people. That's the most important part to me. But yeah, all of that at rightsideradio.org. Rightsideradio.org. And Big Doings is also on there. If you miss a part of the show, or you want to grab a part for a second run, or you want to send a clip to a friend, or even post it on your social media, we would love that. Just know that our podcast is up on there too. You can find, we're podcasted through Podbean, through Apple, through Google, or, you know, all the different versions of podcasting. Yes, we're out there. Go find it. Too easy, but you can also get it right there at rightsideradio.org. And Boomer, what's our podcast up to right now?
70,300.
70,300 downloads. Yes. Like we're up like double digits in percentage of downloads now, you said, right?
Yeah, it's awesome.
All right.
I'm watching it every day and it's like I get excited. I do a happy dance. It's pretty cool.
Boomer doing the happy dance in the studio. All good. All right. Well, listen, we're going to shift gears. Going to number two on the Triple Dipper, Afghanistan, 1 year later. So I'm going to be honest with you, and I know all of y'all, a lot of y'all know this, the military being a big part of my own personal life, that I was in Afghanistan back at the beginning of the war. And I mean the beginning of the war. Like, I was out on a remote team riding horses at times, and it was high adventure. All that to say, I spent a year of my life at the beginning of what became a 20-year conflict. Now, it was not the same conflict. The conflict morphed over time. And we had surges and we had, you know, new fronts and we had, you know, the opportunity for things to go differently and to help with elections and yada, yada. But the bottom line is we were there for 20 years. I would remind you, how long have we been in Germany? How long have we been in Japan? How long have we been in the Philippines? I have no problem with the fact that we could have had an enduring base at Bagram. So what? What a great staging area with Pakistan to our south, China to our east, the former Soviet republics of Tajikistan, Uzbekistan to the north, Kazakhstan to the north, and then, by the way, to the west, Iran. But no, we couldn't do that, not with Biden in office. Keep in mind, the same guy who the only time he's ever been an executive, he's always had, President Joe Biden has always had the luxury of rhetoric without responsibility. He's always had the luxury of 40 years in D.C. where he could go to the microphone, say whatever he wanted to say, and walk away and not own it. And then he became vice president first. And during that vice presidential administration with Obama Biden, if you remember, we had the debacle of a pullout from Iraq. I am not advocating for the continuation of wars in perpetuity. I am not. But the debacle of a pullout in Iraq, the way it was handled, the abrupt pullout, what did it get us? ISIS. It did. Did we have to send troops back again? Yes, we did. What, about a year later? We're sending troops back in to retake ground that we had already fought over. Why? Because they didn't have any clue how to stage an appropriate withdrawal. So you think maybe he would have learned something, right? Maybe somebody like, I don't know, maybe Susan Rice, who still works in that administration now, who was there as a national security advisor for Biden or Obama, is now working in the background in the Biden administration. Maybe she, of all people, could have said, you know, let's watch how we do this, all right? Because we don't want a repeat. We don't want another ISIS scenario. No. So last year, when my show was only about a month and a half old, I was on the air when the news broke about the pullout from Afghanistan and the way it was going. I mean, it just launched. And my show became like a hub of people calling in. I had veterans calling in on a regular basis, just wanted to dialogue with somebody who understood. And I'm going to tell you, too, one of the most heart-wrenching days I have had in the time I've had some times when, you know, people can get my emotions stirred up when they call in with their stories. But I had a lady call in who was a Gold Star mother. If you're not familiar, that means a mother who basically lost a child in the war. And she called, and I'll never forget her asking, did my son die for nothing? Because the way that that debacle of a pullout was being staged was leading people to believe that they had lost their friends, their loved ones, their children, their husbands, their wives, for nothing, because of the absolute destitute of you know, the plan that was destitute of any wisdom was put in place, and the complete jerkiness of the withdrawal. Did they get all the American citizens out first? No. Did they secure all the equipment? No. Did they make sure that the government was stable and in place? No. Did they consider the idea of an enduring base so we could have a forward projection into that part of the world, Southwest Asia? No. Biden just went ahead and repeated exactly what he had presided over in Iraq. To the extent that people were saying, did my son die for nothing? And I told her, and I'll tell all of you again, no. That is no, because those that we lost and those that came back changed and those that lost people that they loved and those that, you know, had to experience the traumas or the resurgence of thoughts and dreams and things that they have to put up with sometimes when they've seen stuff, it was not for nothing. It was not the people in the boots that lost the war. It was the people in the suits that lost the peace, because we won that freaking war. Every time a soldier was asked to do something, every single time a troop was put in harm's way, they equipped and acquitted themselves in fine fashion. The boots won the war, the suits lost the peace, and that's what needs to be remembered. Well, all that to say, here we are 1 year later. This is the week, this is the 1 year. We're 1 year from the date that the debacle of a pullout started, and think about that. Think about what happened. It was at a time when the American psyche was still reeling from COVID, still reeling from the idea of the 2020 elections going so helter-skelter, dealing with the idea that Biden was going to come in and change the face of what we were experiencing in a cultural way. And then on top of all that, just woo, all of a sudden we're pulling out. I get ending a war. I don't want my family members who were just children back when I went over there having to go back. But I also recognize that we still have bases in Korea. We still have bases in Germany, Japan. We still have forward projection opportunities in other parts of the world that came as the result of the status of forces agreements and the treaties of nations that take place in the outcome of a war. And we just threw everything away and just trashed it. But what did we also do to the American and the Afghan psyches? How about the Americans we left behind? Do you know over 800 American citizens have been rescued since the pullout? Billions of dollars worth of equipment just abandoned, some of which we were going to sign over to their army anyway, and I get it. Some of which, though, should never have been left behind. And then on top of all that, is the fact that the government fell so quickly. Oh, the Taliban, we can work with them. Really? How'd that work out before? Where are we now a year later? I tell you what, Boomer, I got a couple of clips. Which one I want to play first here? But I think, Boomer, you got clip two with General Jack Keane. I want to do this. General Jack Keane, this is about a minute and a half. General Jack Keane just nailed it the other day. This is an interview he did on Fox, I think over the weekend. Let's play it, Boomer.
So as we sit here today, has anything changed?
Yeah, it's such a tragic situation and is so preventable. Obviously, the economic destitution of the country itself, a failed state in the sense, people suffering. Taliban have returned to their draconian rule of the 1990s, denying people individual rights. Women cannot work. They can't go to school. They're controlling all of the culture, dress, no music in the country. They're just shutting down all the normal cultural aspirations that a nation or a people would have. And what makes it compounds that is the fact that, look, we went to Afghanistan to stop the Taliban from providing sanctuary to the Al-Qaeda from which the attack on the United States took place. We all know that. And what did this decision get us? It got us the Taliban in charge again, providing sanctuary to the Taliban. I mean, providing sanctuary to the Al-Qaeda. And Zawahiri's killing resurrected the fact that he's living in a Taliban house in a neighborhood that I've been to many times, where senior Taliban leaders are in residence, and obviously they are protecting the Al-Qaeda leader as well as his organization. And to date, we've done nothing against that organization or done nothing against ISIS. So the fact is, Afghanistan is a sanctuary for terrorism. The very reason we went there, the very reason we stayed there for 20 years, to ensure that terrorists did not rise again, attack the American people, and we're right back where we started.
So, General, the...
You can stop it there. Right back where we started. You can look at any number of things here, but not the least of which the general pointed out is the fact that we just took out Ayman al-Zawahiri, the number... He took over after Osama bin Laden was captured and killed. Ayman al-Zawahiri was killed living, like he just alluded to, was killed living in a luxury house in an affluent neighborhood in the center of Kabul, the capital of Afghanistan, basically being protected by the Taliban. So the head of al-Qaeda is comfortable enough living in a nice, and they killed him sitting on his balcony. He had a daily habit of sitting on his balcony. He was basically hiding in plain sight, feeling comfortable, feeling pretty saucy. He's just there. Just able to live because we gave it back to the Taliban. And you hear General Keane's words and you know it's true. He actually used the words, he put it down here that we're in a place right now where it's tragic and it was preventable. Tragic and preventable. Let those words sink in. Tragic and preventable. And don't forget that in that debacle of a pullout, 13 American service members died standing at the gate of the Kabul International Airport. All right, Boomer, take us to a break. We'll do that right now. We'll come back from this break, folks. I'm going to keep this going. You want to call in, you're welcome to it. 833-68-RIGHT. That's 833-687-4448. Call in. Your thoughts, Afghanistan, 1 year later, tell me what you think. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We'll be right back. And we're back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative and just plain right. We're in number two of the Triple Dipper, Afghanistan, 1 year later. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, by the way. 833-68-RIGHT. That's the phone number, 833-687-4448. And I got a caller already holding on line one, so let me go. Oh, it's Brian. Hey, Brian from Huntsville. How you doing, bud?
Doing well, other than the irritation over that Afghanistan withdrawal on the anniversary.
Yeah. Give me your thoughts, man.
Well, I don't agree with the general that we're back in exactly the same space 20 years later.
Okay.
And that we've left technology over there.
Oh, did we just lose him?
There. And we've had Obama false treaties with Iran and giving them lots of money, and they just keep on developing nukes. And if anybody, even though the Shia and the Sunnis don't necessarily get along together, they will team up with the terrorist with a nuclear bomb against Israel or any American interest in the area any given day. So we are worse off.
Well, that's not a bad point, man, and you're right. I mean, over in the far west side of Afghanistan, the major city of Herat was just like it was already a porous border between there and Iran, but probably even more so now.
All right. Well, y'all have as good a day as possible.
All right, man. You too. And I still remember, by the way, some weirdness when I was there. Like, we had so I was there, like I said, back in the beginning, and we had an old Soviet airstrip where we used to receive our resupply drops. And every once in a while, something else would happen out there. We're like, what? Who was that? So we got word of an Iranian plane that flew in. Basically, it flew in low and landed, and we don't know to what extent they were there for. Another time, we had one of the Special Forces guys that I was with. He comes in, he sees me and his team leader, goes, "Hey, sirs, I got to tell you, man, there's some weirdness going out there at the airstrip." "What do you mean?" "I was out there setting up for the resupply, and he said there's a smaller version. It looks like a C-130, but it's not. But it's a German plane. But he said it landed. He said the ramp came down. He said I saw three Muldoons in a civilian vehicle pull up, and I swear they got a body bag out of the back of the of their vehicle and loaded it up, and then came back out with bags of cash." He said, "How do you know it's bags of cash?" "Because I saw it." He said they were all Caucasians, and they pulled away and they kind of waved at me when they saw me. I said, "Who are these dudes?" We found out later on it was French Special Operations. We didn't even know we were working in the area doing something with the local warlord. Just craziness was happening over there all the time. So the idea that everything's copacetic and that nothing could be happening, I got news. It happened then while we were actively engaging the Taliban on the war front. I've still got a brass 105 shell from a Spectre gunship that was fired trying to track down bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda guys in the Tor Bor Mountains in the early parts of 2002. All that was happening, and there was weirdness going on then. What do you think's going on now? And General Keane called it a failed state. Think about Somalia. Right now, Somalia is still considered to be a failed state. The reason why Black Hawk Down occurred like it did back in the 90s was because it was a failed state. It had fallen down to the point that warlords and local leaders were all that there was to try and bring this local jurisdictional control to whatever they believed control meant. And right now we're in a hard spot. And it's just I got plenty more on this, by the way. We're going to break this down. But I would love to hear from folks. And Boomer, just let my caller know, by the way, that I'm going to have to wait till after the break. Yeah, because we're up against it right now. All right, listen, Afghanistan, 1 year later. How do you feel about it? 833-68-RIGHT. 833-687-4448. And I'll say it again. Those of you that sent your sons and daughters, your husbands and your wives over there, who came back changed or some didn't even come back at all, they were not wasted. Their honor is intact, and their mission was honorable. The men and women in the boots did not lose that war. It was the men and women in the suits that lost the peace. All right, well, those of you in Birmingham, you're going to be signing off now. You'll be going to hear Greg Davis, my buddy over there, with Priority Talk, and then coming up in Huntsville, we are there for another hour, and we're staying with this topic, Afghanistan, 1 year later. Y'all stay tuned. We got more.
You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here in the Right Side studio, local, state, national. Dude, we cover all of it. And like the guy just said a moment ago, we are solid, conservative, and just plain right. Okay, so listen, we are still in number two of the triple dipper, Afghanistan, 1 year later. Gonna hunker down on this for a little bit. And if you want to call in, the number is 833-68-RIGHT. That's 833-687-4448. I got a caller on line. Is that Allie? Allie from Athens. How you doing, my friend?
I am doing well, and I want to talk about the disastrous withdrawal from Afghanistan from an MWR, morale, welfare, and recreation perspective. And per usual, I'm not going to be able to do it dry-eyed. So
okay.
Please, sir, hand me the Kleenex, okay?
All right.
The thing from a purely, and I've been doing an interview about World War II patches. It's going to be coming out this Friday. But, so I haven't heard every part of this part of the Dipper. But there, logistically, what could have happened, and it wouldn't have been that big of a deal, would have been, I mean, if you're going to announce to your enemy that you're going to leave in, okay, that's one thing. I mean, there can be an argument made that that's not real smart. But if you do it, for crying out loud, take your equipment with you. Hmm. It would not have been a problem to take stuff so that tanks and comms and all kinds of stuff doesn't end up in the hands of the Taliban. And what we're hearing on the news as they're talking about this one-year anniversary is it's as though it's almost normal that Afghanistan is now controlled by the Taliban, as though that's just, that it's not tragic. So that's part two of my triple dipper, I guess. And
no.
The third thing is this. I spoke with a soldier one time, and I will always, after having been in Iraq, I will always consider MWR on some level to just be a permanent duty station. You don't mess with the Joes and get away with it on my watch. And when you take away people's purpose for what they did and you nullify it, the damage that is being done to our guys and women who were there and made it possible for girls to go to school and made it possible for people to have freedom, for women to have at least a measure of personal agency, and then to just go, we're gone, see ya, wouldn't want to be ya, and by the way, we're going to leave all the toys behind. That's not okay.
Yeah,
and we need what, I've had the chance to talk to one in particular, a fellow who is, he's a client for the newspaper, and he spent a full month in the desert being logistics for people who needed this. He was the one who figured out who went to Launchstuhl and the medevac there, who went to Walter Reed. He was just continual triage. He didn't leave his Humvee. And he has to be the one that watches everything that they did just kind of melt away, and they couldn't even manage a decent withdrawal. Give me a break, sir.
Yeah, you're totally right. And, you know, and not only taking the equipment with them, but how about taking your people with you? I mean, we left
over
1,000 American citizens just abandoned. And we were told, there's very few, maybe 100. Maybe 100? Okay, that's still bad. You knew there were 100 and you still left without them. But
there was no excuse. It's one thing if there had been a real emergency, but there's no excuse. You work logistics. You know what I'm talking about. There is no excuse to not get everybody out first, then get the equipment out, and then get the last person out and have it go smoothly and not disastrously. This is just, I'm not going to say what it is. I'm a good Christian girl. girl, but you know what I'm thinking.
Yeah, it was a goat rodeo. How about that? We'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, sir. Well said. Thank you.
All right. Allie, thanks so much. Great call, as always. Appreciate you, and thanks for what you do. Wow. And she's right. I mean, and by the way, it was a goat rodeo. It was just unbelievable. And you know, and here's the thing, and Allie's got a great point. Take your stuff with you. I get it if there was something that was intent to be left behind for the Afghan National Army to use, but there was a lot of stuff that did not need to be left behind, like, you know, secure comms, communications devices, like satellite technologies. And I don't even know for a fact, but I can't help but wonder, did we leave anything behind that can be used against us, like Stinger anti-aircraft missiles or Javelin anti-tank missiles? Who knows? I don't know. But what I do know is this. There was an uncoordinated, knee-jerk pullout that just happened. And it happened, by the way, against the military advice, against even his advisor's advice. My understanding is within the Biden administration, there was no congruity in this decision. This was basically something that Joe Biden wanted done, and he came in with this mental mandate that it had to happen, and Katie barred the door. And right now, by the way, they're trying to get ahead of the message. So, story here on Fox News, dated yesterday, August 14th. They're scrambling, in my opinion. Scrambling. I even wrote the word scrambling on the top of the page. But scrambling. White House drafts a memo defending the Afghanistan withdrawal. Woo! A spokesperson for President Biden's National Security Council drafted a memo this week defending the administration's withdrawal from Afghanistan, writing that the president, quote, refused to send another generation of Americans to fight a war that should have ended long ago. You know, if that's the case, then what we can say is we're still sending generations of Americans to Germany to live on our enduring bases. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It comes as Republicans, the memo does, the memo from the Biden administration, comes as Republicans on the House Foreign Affairs Committee are preparing to release a report critical of the withdrawal, accusing the administration of failing to evacuate some U.S.-trained Afghan military personnel and potentially creating a major national security risk. Well, then, you know, National Security Council spokesperson Adrian Watson says, bringing our troops home strengthened our national security by better positioning us to confront the challenges of the future. Let me explain something to you, Adrian. I'm not sure if you've ever served in the uniform or not. But if you demoralize the troops and make them feel like what they do is no longer valid, needed, or worthy by means of a complete undermining of the authority of the military presence, then you have not increased national security. And oh, by the way, when you do that in the eyes of the world, the rest of the world looks at it and goes, this guy's in charge. If we need to do something, now's the time, a.k.a. Ukraine. And she goes on to say, it freed up critical military intelligence and other resources to ensure that we're better poised to respond to today's threats. Shut up. It did not. I mean, what did it free up? In the vast majority, the great totality of circumstances here, you brought home 2,500 troops who had a logistical train, yes, who also had an enduring base over there, yes, who also, by the way, were helping maintain a prison where the worst of Al-Qaeda and Taliban were being housed, who were all freed immediately upon our departure. It also undermined and destabilized a government that apparently relied upon us for our presence to prop them up. Now, some would say, well, they need to be able to do it on their own. Yes, they do. Do you know what it takes? It takes a generation sometimes to get over that stuff. Now, and was it so bad for us, by the way, to pour millions and millions of dollars into Bagram Air Base and then keep it for future use? Because you know what? We don't live in Germany, and we don't live in Japan, and we don't live in Korea rent-free. We pay those governments a good bit of money as tenants to reside there. We are good neighbors and good allies in those countries. And our forward presence in NATO and our forward presence on the Korean Peninsula and in Japan have kept peace in those parts of the world. And right now what we're being told is, well, the Taliban were no longer a threat, and Al-Qaeda is gone, and, you know, it's ISIS-K, ISIS-K. Well, ISIS-K is bad, too. And ISIS-K apparently killed 13 of our service members at the gate. But then if you look at it, oh, by the way, Ayman al-Zawahiri moved back into a house in a beautiful neighborhood. And where did we take him out? I'm glad we took him out, by the way. Where did we take him out? In Afghanistan. Who was he? Oh, that's right. He was the head of Al-Qaeda. When we get back, I'm going to tell you about a story I got from Politico. It talks about how many Americans and how many legal residents that we know of that they're now admitting were left behind, not the least of which others who may have been rescued. Boomer, take us to a break, brother. We'll do that right now. We'll come back. And I got another audio clip I want to play you when we get back that sort of outlines where things are right now, because Fox News has got a guy, Trey Yingst, who is actually in Kabul right now. And I hope he's got a bodyguard, because that's not a stable place. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Gotta let it play a second, Boomer. Gotta let it play, man. Yeah. All right, we are back. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, and loving that Van Halen. I just some of the best guitar in the world. You ever watch Eddie Van Halen play guitar? I mean, the guy just it just flowed. His hands just did things. You can tell he didn't even think about it. It just happened. It's amazing. All right. Hey, listen, I'm still in number two of the Triple Dipper. I'm going to wind up wrapping this thing up here in the next few minutes. Boomer, get that clip one ready, please. That one for Trey Yingst over in Afghanistan. So it's funny. During the break, I looked over and I looked at Boomer and I said, look at the screens, man. But we have two big screens up on the wall directly across from me in the studio. CNN on the left screen, that's appropriate, and Fox on the right screen, both of them tracking the one-year pullout of Afghanistan. Neither one, by the way, providing much favorable content to the Biden administration, believe it or not. But Trey Yingst is actually there right now, which I almost find a little surprising, to be honest. But I'll be honest, he stood right smack in the middle of the heat in Ukraine most recently. But yeah, tell you what, Boomer, clip one, Trey Yingst in Afghanistan. Go ahead and play it.
Jillian, tomorrow marks 1 year since the Taliban took control of Afghanistan. Since then, the country's economy has collapsed, plunging millions of people below the poverty line. Women's rights have decreased, and the security situation here remains tense. Though when you are walking through the streets of Kabul behind me, there's a sense of normalcy. There are street vendors out selling food. You can hear those horns honking behind me. There is traffic, and the Taliban patrols like a police force. Though beyond that veneer sits fear and uncertainty for the Afghan people. Remember, when U.S. forces left this country, they left behind thousands of American allies, translators, and people who worked at the U.S. embassy. And those people are terrified. We spoke with one today who spent months in a safe house. He's worried about the lives of his family, and he's stuck here in Afghanistan. And while the Taliban puts on a good face for the international community and they release statements, their words often do not match their actions. One example, they released a decree saying that women here are free, though women are not allowed out at night without a male escort. Young women, particularly teenagers, aren't able to go to secondary school in most of the country. And any woman leaving their house has to be completely covered. That's the situation right now on the ground in Afghanistan. Jillian?
Cut it there. And it goes on and on and on. If you think for a second the Taliban are different, like, well, it's 20 years later. Maybe they've progressed. No, they haven't. They sat around in their caves and got mad, and they thought of all the things they were going to do if they got power back. And guess what? Biden handed them their power back. And what's the first thing they did? Draconian cultural measures that put women into, you know, a previous century. Listen, I'm going to tell you, when I got there, it was apparent. I mean, women have been, I don't mean like a little bit, I mean like subjugated. I don't say that word lightly. They had been subjugated. Women were cattle. in Afghanistan. Now, I mean, you still had good homes, good houses where, you know, mom was, you know, still mom and the matriarch of the home and loved her kids. But as soon as you walked outside the walls, because every house over there has a wall around it, as soon as you walked outside the walls, you better not have your ankles showing. You could be beaten in the street because your burqa did not sufficiently cover your ankles. Yeah. Think about that for a second. Girls' schools became barracks for Taliban troops because they were no longer necessary because girls were not allowed to read or write. I'll never forget one time I stepped outside the gate of my safe house in Kunduz, Afghanistan, and one of my other guys stepped out with me at the same time, and right then we heard the sound of an old raggedy engine, and there was some beat-up old car coming down the road. We kind of looked to our left, and here comes, oh boy, looked like, you know, like Methuselah turned Taliban, right? I mean, he was like 120 years old, looked like, and he was driving down the road, and there was a goat in the front seat beside him and a woman in the back seat. The goat got the front seat of the car, and it kind of, we sat there and watched it go by, and I looked at my dude, and I said, did you see that? He goes, I saw that. That's life, again, in Afghanistan. Afghan girls facing an uncertain future after a year of no school, says NBC News on August 14th. Did you hear the part that Trey Yig said? They're not allowed to go to secondary school anymore. They're sort of letting things happen with the upper-level education, but yeah, the interesting piece of this, though, is ain't nobody going to college if they don't finish secondary school. If they're not allowed to go to secondary school, then guess what? Women's education begins to shut down. But how about this? As I wrap this segment up, Politico, not known for being, you know, a conservative publication, not known for being a publication where you would go to get the, you know, the opinions and the positions and the news and the facts that might not be favorable to the Biden administration. Politico, dated yesterday, 800 Americans evacuated from Afghanistan since the Taliban takeover. It says the U.S. government has evacuated more than 800 American citizens from Afghanistan since the Taliban swept to power. It points out in the same article that 2 weeks after the last U.S. plane left, that Secretary of State Antony Blinken told lawmakers there was only maybe 100 Americans left. Now, first of all, if you knew there were 100, why did you leave them? But nonetheless, now we find out that our U.S. government has evacuated 800 since then. On top of that, that's not even including, by the way, another 600 or so legal permanent residents, people who had a right to be here even though they weren't citizens. So there's 1,400. And oh, by the way, I know because I'm affiliated with certain groups that have been trying on the private sector to evacuate people ever since then, who have evacuated hundreds and hundreds more. So folks, it was a debacle. I'm not going to leave this alone. We're going to talk about this off and on for the next little while. But yeah, 800 Americans that were being admitted to now by the Biden administration were abandoned in the debacle that wound up creating just a gaping hole in Southwest Asia. Afghanistan, 1 year later, are we better? Nope, we're not. All right, folks, listen, we're going to wrap it up. We're going to lighten the mood when I get back, sort of. Adventures in Woke World coming up next. Y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back.